Yes, this is the Yorkshire Football Show here on Radio Yorkshire. A brand new show, our first show tonight. And we're with you until 10 o'clock. And it's time for the Yorkshire Football Phone Up. And I should probably start by explaining what this section of the show will be. Basically, we pick four topics, four big things happening both locally, nationally, even internationally in football. And we talk to fans and experts to find out more about it. Sounds pretty simple, eh, lads?
Yeah.
We're going to start tonight by talking about Sheffield Wednesday. And Tom, it's been a fantastic season for them so far. I think a lot of people expected them to be better this year with all the money they've got. But, you know, they're in the top six. And as those teams start to lose games and draw games, Wednesday looking like they could even come in the top two.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a fantastic squad as well. And, you know, the signing of Gary Hooper, to me, was the marquee signing. He's someone who will get goals. And I think the big thing there was the spirit they showed on Saturday. They beat Birmingham 2-1 after Kieran Westwood went off with a horrible injury and got that win. And, you know, at full time, all the Wednesday fans sang their song. And I just feel that that is the kind of result when your back's against the wall and you're able to win, you must feel on top of the earth for the next couple of games.
Well, let's get the thoughts of a Sheffield Wednesday fan. We're joined on the line now by Alex. Good evening, Alex. How are you doing?
Good evening. I'm doing well, thank you. Very well indeed.
Good to hear. And I suppose we'll start off by just getting you to sum up your feelings being a Sheffield Wednesday fan at the moment.
Well, I'm riding the crest of a wave at the minute. I think that's the best way to describe it. Really good times at Hillsborough at the minute. Really good times. I mean, sort of had 15 years of nothing, and all of a sudden this season, bit of money, some very good players, and the whole feel of the place has changed totally. So, I mean, I'm feeling great. I'm feeling great, and I think the last game we played on Saturday, it just felt like a bit of a turning point, bit of a big moment in the season. So, I don't think I could be much happier about being a Sheffield Wednesday fan at the minute.
Well, let's talk about that game against Birmingham on Saturday, because they had to overcome a little bit of adversity during that game. Kieran Lee getting injured in the warm-up, and then a bit of a collision of heads between Hutchinson and the keeper in the first half.
Yeah.
They both came off injured, and you went a goal down, and could have been about 3-0 to Birmingham by half-time.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I think that's why it was such a big win. I think that's why it felt like such a huge win. I mean, Kieran Lee, Hutchinson and Westwood are, you know, key players, real, you know, big players. It's the spine of the team, really. And to lose them, it just felt like it wasn't our day. I mean, it was throwing it down with rain. It was a horrible day, horrible pitch, lost three players and then went a goal down in injury time. It did not feel like it was our day. But, I mean, the goals were, you know, worthy of the Premier League. The first, the equaliser, unbelievable football. The winner was just very clinical. A really good win, and like I say, it just felt like a turning point. It felt like we've been doing well, but I've always had in the back of my mind thinking, I don't think we've got enough this year to actually make the playoffs. After the game, I thought, wow, we're 6 points off the summit. So that's how much of a game changer Saturday was for me. I don't know if any other Wednesday fans would agree with me, but it felt like a big turning point in the season.
No, I'm sure it did. Gary Hooper got both goals, 2 in 3 minutes for Wednesday. He's sort of like the opposite of Adebayor. He was not so good when he was on loan, and as soon as you sign him on a permanent basis in January, he's been banging him in.
Yeah. I think with Gary Hooper is, he was very sort of unsure about his future. Even when he was on loan with us, he's probably thinking, you know, I don't know if he's probably thinking, I'm going to end up going back to Norwich and going to be sat on the bench again. I think since we've signed him, he knows he's sort of involved in a bit of a project, and he, you know, to be fair, he's probably getting paid good money. But, I mean, at least he knows he's involved, he knows that he's wanted. You know, the fans have invented they've not invented it, but they've got a nice song for him. So I think he feels welcome. And he scored 9 goals in, I think it's 10 matches, which is a brilliant record for the Championship. He's creeping up the top scorer chart in the Championship. So, brilliant. We've got Forestier on 11, Hooper on 9. Wednesday have not had a player who's scored 20 goals since Steve McLean, I believe, in 2005. So that'll be interesting if one of them could get 20 goals.
No, it certainly would be. And that's what you need to get anywhere near the top six. If you look at the clubs around Wednesday in the Championship table, you've got Hull, they've got Hernandez, Burnley have got Gray. The list just goes on, really, doesn't it? Let's talk about the reason why Wednesday have got so many good players at the moment. Dave Fonchanziri, the chairman who's come in with all this money. We've seen so many foreign owners come in, invest a lot of money and it not go to plan. He only came last summer. It's already probably ahead of schedule, I suppose.
Yeah, I think so. I think he did say he wanted to be in the Premier League by 2017, which is our 150th anniversary, no less. He seems like a good owner. I think he sort of he's learned by his mistakes. Really, he tried to get a bit of the famous committee in with Glenn Roeder and a few other names that you might know quite well. And that didn't work. And to be fair to him, he sort of said, well, fair enough, you know, it didn't work. A few of them left by their own accord. A few of them were pushed out, I think. And he's gone with King Carlos. And it's gone well for him, to be fair. I don't think even Chanteri would have thought it could have gone this well, to be fair. Because, you know, think of there are clubs who it goes really wrong. I'm thinking about Cardiff at the minute. With their owner, I mean...
Vincent Tan. Sort of,
yeah, Vincent Tan. I mean, their fans sort of turn against them big style. And, you know, the crowds they get are really poor. So, I mean, it can go really wrong. And Chanteri, somehow, I don't know how, but he's got it really right, which is brilliant for us.
It certainly is. One thing that Chanteri's done, he's changed the club logo. I don't remember the old one, but I'm told that the current badge is very much like the old one. What are the fans thinking about it?
I think it's got a bit of a mixed reception, really. I like it, to be fair. I think it's not a new badge. It's an old new badge, if that makes sense. So, I mean, I wasn't around, but in the 1950s, it came about, but we didn't actually use it for some reason. So it's an old new badge, and I think the previous one had had its day. Really, it was sort of a bit Art Deco, wasn't it? The owl on its own.
Minimalist.
Minimalist. Yeah, and I think the retro looks in, isn't it? I'm told. I don't know. I'm no fashionista.
But, well, Manchester City have done something similar. They've, to use your phrase, Alex, they've used an old new badge as well, and it's gone down very well with the fans. So perhaps that's the way forward.
Yeah, I think so. I think the previous one was a bit too minimalistic in a way. And like you say, the retro badges are in, so why not? And apparently, it looks really good on our new screen at the ground. So. I mean, that's fine, isn't it? That's good enough. If it looks good on the new screen, then that's fine.
Well,
I'll go with it.
Well, you'll get to see the new screen on Saturday, the visit of Brentford. This would be a really tough game for Wednesday, but they probably go into it as favourites.
Yeah, and that's sort of something we need to start getting used to at home. We've got a brilliant home form. Brentford are sort of mid-table now, but I mean, they've got some dangerous players. Let's not forget they've got Judge, who's scored, I think he's scored 11 this year, so he's a really dangerous player. I just hope that we've got them sort of the players thinking we need to take this one game at a time, because if we look at our home fixtures, they're all very winnable, but we've played Charlton, we've lost to Charlton away, we lost to MK Dons. What the pattern with Wednesday is that the games where we're expected to win, we really don't win. So I'm a bit worried about Saturday, and I think I just hope that he'll get them together and say, look, we need to win this game, because it's a huge game. The Birmingham result, you know, it'll be nothing without us following that up and beating Brentford on Saturday, and we need to attack them. We need to attack them from the off, and we need to finish the game, you know. 2-0, I think, but we do need to attack them from the off. We need a high-intensity game, because the other thing that I worry about with Wednesday is that they never start well. Never start well. We rely on our second-half performance. I just hope Carlos gives his half-time team talk before the match on Saturday. I really do.
That'll probably help them beat Brentford. Just finally then, we look at the league table at the moment, and I don't think Wednesday fans could ever have expected to be just 6 points off the top spot. They have played one more game than Hull, who are top at the moment. But when you look at the table, Hull on 56, Middlesbrough on 56, then Burnley 55, Brighton 53, Derby in woeful form on 51, and then it's Sheffield Wednesday in sixth. Can you go up this season?
Yes, we can. We can. And I think we can still finish in the top two. I really do.
Well, there you go. You heard it first. Alex, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Yorkshire this evening.
Thank you.
The Yorkshire Football Show.
We're going to talk about Barnsley now, because it's been an interesting few months for them. A dreadful run of 10 defeats in 11 games before Christmas saw them bottom of League One. Then they won 6 on the bounce, qualified for a Wembley final. And then their manager, Lee Johnson, left to join Bristol City. To talk about this is a big Barnsley fan, and that's Joe Beardsall. Good evening, Joe. How are you doing?
Evening, Bill. You all right?
Very good, thank you. Very good. It's been an interesting few months for Barnsley, hasn't it? What's it been like as a fan?
It's been up and down. I mean, you look at the 8 games that we lost in a row, and I tell you, it was a depressing time as a Barnsley fan, turning up to watch that every week. But then to think that, pretty much, minus a couple of players, the same team are now, you know, on a 7-game winning run, and we're going to Wembley. It's crazy to even think that. But yeah, such a great season now, and things are really looking up for us. So yeah, exciting times for Barnsley fans.
When Barnsley were on that terrible run, were the team playing well and not quite getting the results, or was the performances pretty bad as well?
Well, it was a bit of a weird one, because the first couple, I think we played Port Vale and Doncaster, and we lost both of those games 2-1. And both of those games, I came out thinking we should have won that game. Like, I don't even know how we managed to lose. And then it just sort of got worse. I think the confidence dropped, the heads went. And I don't think it was that we were particularly playing badly at the beginning of that run. But I think things just got worse and worse. And, you know, as it went on, we did start to play a bit worse because of the lack of confidence. I don't think it was ever ability. I think it was just mindset for the lads we've got. I think the lads we have got are brilliant footballers, but they were trying to play in a way and it just weren't quite working yet. But it's got to a point now where I think it is working. And we're starting to see sort of the sort of club philosophy, if you like, that Johnson's tried to leave working now, but obviously he's gone. So
yeah, he's gone, and that's one of the things we wanted to talk about. Obviously, he's not had the greatest record in League One. He was at Oldham first, then Barnsley, and the club kept faith with him during that bad run. And as soon as he's gone on a good run, he's attracted a Championship club and he's left. I mean, how do the fans feel about that? Do they feel like they've been let down by Lee Johnson at all?
Well, I think it's a 50-50 on this one. I mean, fans like myself will probably sort of look at it level-headedly and see the fact that Lee Johnson, you know, he's got connections to Bristol City, he's played for them, his dad's managed them, his family are there. You know, what would you do if you had the offer of a higher league club and it's your sort of club, if you like? But then there are other fans, you know, who will say, come on, we were on a great run, you know, we stuck by you. When we were losing 8 in a row, we stuck by you, and now we're winning, you've left us. So I guess it's a 50-50, really, depends which fan you are to whether you back him and wish him well or whether you want him to fail at Bristol City.
Hi, Joe. Danny here. Just wanted to pick up on something from earlier in the season. I went to Oakwell for Bradford against Barnsley. It was 0-0 there, and I was asking fans before the game what they thought, and they were after some maybe a bit of playoff action. Then I'd spoke to them later in the season. You beat us over at Valley Parade, but he seemed a lot more optimistic there as well. But what I wanted to know is, what are the expectations now for the rest of the season, with the first half being so mixed?
Well, that's an interesting question, because as you said, the first half was so poor that you kind of, as a Barnsley fan, kind of sit at Christmas going, well, as long as we stay up, and you know, that'll do us, because we were pretty down in the dumps. But now it's all turned around. I mean, you know, sky's the limit. Obviously, we want to win at Wembley. We want to win the JPT. That is the main thing. But you look at that league position now, 5 points off playoffs. It's only going to take a few more wins to sort of boost us up there, and then we can start believing. But at the minute, I think it's just going to be about sort of getting a bit more, keep this consistency going. Let's see if we can beat Gillingham away. That's the real big test, because they've been up there all season. If we can get 3 points or even a point against them and then come back to Oakwell and beat Donny, I think playoffs have got to be a realistic prospect.
And looking at the managerial vacancy, I mean, the caretakers are in charge at the minute. They look to be favourites to get it, but obviously Neil Redfern's now unemployed again. The
Barnsley
Romantics
legend
are wanting him to go to Barnsley. Is he someone you'd want there?
Me personally, I'd say yeah. I think he'd do a good job. But I've spoke to a lot of my friends who are Barnsley fans, and I say no. So, it's a bit of a mixed one because, I mean, I see it and I think you look at what he did at Leeds under a difficult circumstance. He kept Leeds up and I thought he did quite a good job at Leeds. Went in at Rotherham. Quite a difficult job, you know. There's some big budgets in that Championship, and to go to Rotherham and try and keep them up, it's going to be a challenge. And they got a couple of good results in that run. You know, I think they beat Hull and Brighton in that run as well. I know they've just lost a couple of games to Charlton and to Bolton, and that's probably why Rotherham have decided to sort of say the goodbyes to Neil Redfern. But for me, I still think he's got a lot to offer. I know he's still only done sort of a manager's role for probably about a season if you work it out. But I think Barnsley might be a good place to start. He's sort of boosted his career, and I think he'd do really well for us. But like I say, a lot of Reds fans are saying no. They think that Paul Heckingbottom's the man. And me personally, I won't mind if Paul Heckingbottom gets put in charge for the rest of the season, and if Tommy Wright stays, then that'd be fantastic as well. Because it's not broken. Why try and fix it, really?
Yeah, that seems to be the hierarchy the club seems to be thinking at the moment. They've got a structure in place that they want to keep to. I'm looking down the list, Joe, and there's some really interesting names on the contenders. You've got Uwe Rosloos, formerly of Leeds United, of course. Gareth Ainsworth, yeah, who's been doing a good job. Stuart Gray, formerly of Sheffield Wednesday. Then you go down the list further. You've got Bobby Hassel, Barnsley legend at 33-1. Gary Johnson, Lee Johnson's dad's on there. And Tim Sherwood, which would be interested in any of them, Joe.
Well, it'd be a bit weird if Gary Johnson comes in. That'd be a bit strange. Roles reversed, I guess.
Exactly.
Obviously, Bobby Hassel is a club legend, so yeah, I'd love to see him in at some point in the future, but maybe not the time right now. I think that the main thing is, when you're listing these other names like Rosler, I think the problem is we've spent all the season sort of building this philosophy, and if you read about sort of what the club's trying to do, they built from the bottom upwards. We put a lot of structure in place. That's why Lee Johnson was a head coach, not a manager. Because if he did decide to leave, that the structure was still there. And I think it's really good what the club have tried to do with that, build a structure and try and build it from bottom level. So you've got young players coming through. And I think if we brought a manager in, not that I've got anything against a manager like Uwe Rosler, but if we brought him in, I think he'd want his own philosophy, his own style. I think it might mix things up a bit too much and maybe disrupt the season. So for me, I think the club are doing the right thing. If they did decide to stick with Paul Heckingbottom or potentially maybe twist it a little bit by bringing Redfern in, then I think that would probably be the right thing for me.
Well, it'll be certainly very interesting to see what their next move is. They're just 5 points off the top six at the moment, Barnsley, so hopefully can mount a challenge for the playoffs as the season goes on. Joe, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Yorkshire this evening.
No problem. Thanks, Billy.
The Yorkshire Football Show with Billy Banks on Radio Yorkshire.
As you may have noticed, football clubs in China have been pretty much splashing the cash in recent weeks. Chelsea midfielder Ramirez was the first to be snapped up for around £25 million before Atletico Madrid striker Jackson Martinez and Shakhtar Donetsk attacker Alex Teixeira joined him in the Far East. Today we're hearing an unnamed Chinese club after West Ham's Dimitri Payet and also a second division club looking at Nikita Yelovich. But where is this money coming from and why? Well, according to The Guardian, the Chinese president Xi Jinping has launched a 50-point plan to turn the country into a soccer powerhouse capable of winning the World Cup. Joining us to tell us more is Professor Simon Chadwick, who's an expert in sports enterprise at the University of Salford and has been following these recent developments in China. Good evening, Simon. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Good evening.
Let's talk Chinese football. Been very, very interesting watching a nation not really known for its footballing prowess break its transfer record 3 times in 10 days. What's behind this sudden sort of splurge in spending?
Well, we've seen China before sign players and be on the verge of a boom or an explosion, if you like. But something has really changed over the last 14 or 15 months, because at the end of 2014, President Xi, the Chinese president, announced a plan to create the world's largest sport economy. So what they're trying to do by 2025 is to create a domestic sport industry worth $850 billion. And this is huge by any stretch of the imagination. But an important part of this plan is China's desire to firstly bid for the right to host the World Cup, then secondly to win that bid, but most importantly and thirdly, it's to actually win the World Cup itself. So what we're now seeing at the moment is China trying to effectively create a domestic football industry, if we can call it that, with a view to winning World Cup at some stage in the future.
What's quite interesting behind this is knowing a bit about the history and culture of China, because of its history of communism, they've not really excelled at team sports. It's been mainly individual sports, or things like the Olympics, where they've done really well. Is this obviously now a state-backed thing and something that the whole country is behind, getting good at football?
China has changed. If we look at Li Na, the former Chinese tennis star, she was really important because Li Na didn't come through a state system. Most Chinese athletes generally tend to come through a state system, and this state system was put together under communism. But I think now what we're starting to see, in pretty much the same way as we saw with Li Na, is football being supported by the private sector. There are a couple of notable people. So, for example, one guy, Wang Jianlin, is very, very important. So he's the owner of a company called Wanda. And they took a 20% stake in Atletico Madrid this time last year. But in addition to that, he's bought up lots and lots of other sports properties too. So he's investing a lot of money and really trying to do the state's work on their behalf. There's another guy called Jack Ma. Jack Ma is the founder of a company called Alibaba, which is a bit like Chinese eBay. And he owns part of Guangzhou Evergrande. For people who don't know, Guangzhou Evergrande, five times consecutive winners of the Chinese Super League up to 2015, and also winners of the Asian Champions League in two of the last 3 years.
And when you look at the amount of money which is being spent right now and the names which are being brought in, you've got the likes of Jackson Martinez, the likes of Alex Teixeira, you look at the management as well. It really is the case that they are spending serious money, and it doesn't look like this is anywhere near to being stopped.
Well, my view is, and I'll predict something, that at some stage over the next 12 months, we'll see the world transfer fee record being broken. And I think a Chinese club will break that record. The Chinese love records. They love breaking records. And so this is well within their sight. And I think for those people who think this is just a flash in the pan, it's something that will disappear very quickly, I think this is completely different to the past. I think the Chinese clubs will continue to buy players. I think we'll see some really big names going there. Obviously, we've seen some relatively big names already, you know, certainly players that were associated with Premier League clubs over the transfer window. But I think at some stage in the very near future, really big names will go there. And this is all very important for the Chinese because I think it announces to the world that they're there and that they're serious, they mean business. I think such players are very important because they're a point of engagement for fans, because Chinese fans, just like fans around the world, need heroes and icons. And I think the other thing, the other important purpose that these players serve is that they raise the skill level and they help Chinese players to learn. So the influence of these players is strong. So on that basis, expect more to come. And keep in mind that the Chinese transfer window doesn't close until the 26th of February as well.
Yeah, plenty of time for them to bring some more players in. We've seen sort of players towards the end of their careers and sort of mercenaries go towards China in the past, people like Nicolas Anelka and Didier Drogba. But these are big names signing for Chinese teams. Bearing in mind what you've just said, Simon, how worried should the likes of the Premier League, La Liga, Serie A and Ligue 1 be by this rise in Chinese spending potential?
As Arsene Wenger said on Friday, Premier League clubs and European clubs generally should be very concerned, and I agree with Wenger completely. If we look at the case of Martinez and Teixeira, clearly Premier League clubs were hoping, or we're led to believe were hoping, to sign these players, and they've been outbid by the Chinese. So that is a very telling sign, I think. And what's particularly interesting is this debate now about are such players mercenary? Are they going just for the money? Well, it's an interesting one, because obviously some players will go just for the money, absolutely, in which case there's probably very little the Premier League or any other league in the world can do to stop them. If players don't go for the money, I think these players are represented very well by agents, and what agents are very adept at doing is playing one country off or one club off against another. So, for example, if we can imagine Messi, I'm sure Messi won't go to China anytime soon. However, if he's renegotiating his contract, I'm sure his agent can tout around the story that there are Chinese buyers potentially on the horizon. And this suddenly ramps up salary levels, transfer fees, and obviously that impacts upon Premier League clubs. It impacts upon their bottom lines, their profitability. And it means they have to pay more. So in other words, if they're going to compete with the Chinese for these players, they're probably going to have to pay more in salary and more in transfer fees.
China currently number 93 in the FIFA world rankings. They've clearly got a long way to go in terms of development. What are the Chinese football authorities doing to make sure that the Chinese players develop alongside these top stars that are coming in for the big money?
The Chinese have instigated a massive internal reform plan because historically football was developed through the state system. But now what we're starting to see is certainly state academies, particularly at provincial level, but also private academies run by companies, also run by former Western footballers. So, for example, Ronaldo, this is the Brazilian Ronaldo as opposed to the Portuguese Ronaldo. The Brazilian Ronaldo has just opened up a series of football schools and have several other football clubs from Europe. So this is not just a top-down model. This is not just buying lots and lots of expensive players from overseas. It's also investing in grassroots and player development. One of the interesting things about China's or Chinese investors' recent takeover of or purchase of a 13% stake in Manchester City is very interesting, because Manchester City has this campus concept that it's working to. So it's not just the Etihad Stadium. There is a football campus around it. And the Chinese like this idea, and so I don't think their acquisition of a 13% stake was accidental or coincidental. I think they deliberately went for City because they like this plan. And this is what we're going to see more of in China, is these kind of out-of-town campuses where kids can go and study in the morning and play in the afternoon. Their parents are happy, because Chinese parents tend not to want their kids to be footballers. They want them to be accountants and engineers and doctors and this kind of thing. So they can go to these campuses, get a good education, learn to play football. And in the meantime, obviously, China as a country, the overall level of skill amongst their young people increases and improves.
Same different bucket. The Yorkshire Football Show on Radio Yorkshire. You know, I quite like saying that.
You're listening to the Yorkshire Football Phone Up. We've already talked about Sheffield Wednesday, Barnsley, and this boom in Chinese football spending. We're going to talk a bit of Bradford City now. We're going to talk to Jason McKeown. He's a big Bradford fan and editor of the award-winning Width of a Post website and author of a book as well, which we'll talk about. He joins us on the line now. Good evening, Jason. How are you?
Good evening. Yeah, good. Thank you.
Good to have you on. The first thing I wanted to talk to you about was ticket prices, funnily enough. There's been a lot of stink being put up by Liverpool fans. They had that protest at the weekend about tickets costing as much as £77 from next season. But for Bradford, they're a club who've looked after their fans with tickets. They had that initiative at the start of the season to give fans cheap season tickets. And this is the sort of thing that can generate a lot of goodwill between the club and the fans, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, and it's been a massive success for Bradford City. We've ended up this season having 18,000 season ticket holders, which, when you bear in mind, back in the Premier League days, we didn't have that many season ticket holders then. So I think it's a fantastic deal. And you know, you mentioned the Liverpool example of £77. They, you know, at that price, they'd be watching two Premier League games versus 23 that you can watch on a Bradford City season ticket for £149. So it's great value, and I think, to be honest, I think the club's a bit lucky that more people don't shout about it, really, because it's really the spotlight at the moment, what's going on with ticket prices at the top level. And I think they should be looking at things like what Bradford City are doing, and other clubs should be copying it.
Yeah, surely it's a no-brainer in terms of PR as well, because if a club or a big Premier League club was to come out and say, we're going to, you know, we don't need the money from ticket sales as much anymore, we'll put the ticket prices down, surely that's just an absolute no-brainer.
Exactly. I think I do find it quite staggering at the top level that they do continue to put the price up like this when they're all quite open that they don't need a ticket revenue as much as they used to do. Whereas for a club like Bradford City, the ticket revenue is everything, really, because, you know, the TV money down here is very, very small, really, in relation to the Premier League money. And, you know, for us to go and do something like that, you know, to get more sport in, you'd think that other clubs would be a bit more, you know, not, no one's saying they should all go down to 149 or anything like that, like, but, you know, they should certainly be more affordable for regular people, which they aren't at the moment.
Jason, Danny here. Just wanted to pick up on the Burton game. I mean, when that lineup came out, the diamond back again, did you think that was a bit of a negative lineup? What were your thoughts when that team news came out?
It was always going to be quite a difficult fixture, simply because we sold Gary Little on transfer deadline day to Chesterfield, and there was waiting almost for another player to come in when the loan window opened this week, and also Lee Evans, who's been quite key, was still suspended. So I think it was always going to be a bit of a patch-up midfield. The debate rages whether, you know, it was too negative in the sense that we didn't play with Weidman, having recently had quite a lot of success with Matt Marshall playing quite well, and Carl Reid, having a good spell of form and playing very well the weekend before from the bench. So I can understand that, but I think at the end of the day, you still expect more from the players who actually played. They should still have been able to give Burton a better game than they did do. So, I think that's what we're going to look at more than anything is, you know, we're competing better against the top teams.
And when you look at it, obviously a disappointing result, but where Bradford City are in the table, because it's such a competitive league, if you can go on and run 5 or 6 wins in a row, you're going to be right up there in the playoffs.
Absolutely. It's just about if it can just suddenly click. And I think it could do. We had quite a good run of form before Christmas. It's tailed away now, definitely. But you look at what Barnsley have done, you know, they've come from nowhere and suddenly started winning lots and lots of games. So I think, you know, it just... If we can get the team right, the balance correct, and resolve the very big goal-scoring problem, then, you know, there's still plenty of football left to play this season, and I don't think anyone needs to give up hope of the top six just yet.
How important are these next three fixtures coming up for the rest of the season now? Peterborough, Southend, Rochdale, some of these teams are up and around in it, and these are the teams that Bradford really need to be beating.
Yeah, definitely, and the record, like I say, has been very poor against the top teams this season. All too often they've been able to take points off Bradford City quite comfortably, so something has got to be rectified. Peterborough are doing really well this season, surprisingly really, because I think most of the standards have struggled a bit more this season, and you know, Southend have been really good as well. So, you know, the sort of games where we need to, you know, certainly not be losing these kind of games, and, you know, picking up more regular points, because then if we can get a good haul over this period, then with some easier home games, you know, as the season comes towards its end, and that would set us up nicely in the running, I think.
You talked a little bit there about the lack of goals from Bradford City. I mean, it's been the Achilles heel so far. Do you think the likes of Wes Thomas and Proctor can solve that in the coming months?
I think they can do. For what I've seen of Proctor, he looks a very decent acquisition. You know, he's come a bit left field from Fleetwood Reserve, so he wasn't someone that's going to get the fans excited. But he had a very good debut at Port Vale, which I went to watch, and he looks a good players, someone who can help Hansen out, definitely. Wes Thomas doesn't seem to be match fit at the moment, from what I've seen. He looks a little bit off the pace, so it's just about building him up a little bit, but certainly he showed what he's capable of in the Fleetwood home game when he helped to set up the winning goal, so I think they can make a difference. It's all about getting the service to the players, though, and that's been the issue much as anything, really, for the strikers. You know, they're not necessarily getting the chances to put away, so if we can try and get that balance a bit better, you know, over the coming weeks, I think that's what Phil Paxton will be trying to do, then I think, you know, the goals should start to come, definitely.
One thing I've been thinking about recently, Jason, as someone who's not a Bradford fan, is wondering if Phil Parkinson's perhaps taken Bradford as far as he can. Obviously, last season was pretty good, finishing 7th and getting quite far in the FA Cup. There was the League Cup final a couple of years ago as well, but this season seeming to struggling to score goals as well. Do you think he has taken Bradford as far as he can, or is there plenty more to come from Phil?
I don't think there's any doubt there's plenty more to come. I think when you do look at Phil Parkinson's time in charge, which is getting towards 5 years now, there's been a lot of really great moments, and everyone knows all about the games like Chelsea and Arsenal and those kind of moments. But there's also been a lot of difficult periods as well, fighting relegation the first season, you know, having a difficult first season in League One as well when we got promoted. And even last season before the Cup run with Chelsea, there was a lot of, you know, talk then about maybe he should be sacked as manager. So I think he's always time and time again proved he can get through these kind of adverse periods. He's not perfect by any means, and we do have these up and down spells, but I think he's a man who knows who can get the solutions and find the answers. And, you know, it's a shame that this season is petering out a little bit, because we all expected a lot more than what we're getting this season. You know, in terms of the squad that we put together should be performing better. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But I think that he's the manager who can, you know, come in, you know, in the summer and make the changes that are needed. And certainly I think he'll get the opportunity. And, you know, I think there's a lot more to come.
One thing I wanted to pick up on is Matt Marshall. Now, he didn't have the greatest start to his City career. He got a bit of stick from the fans. But from just the Burton performance and a couple of the others, is he starting to excite you a little bit now? Do you think we can see more of why Phil Parkinson brought him in, and maybe there'll be a bit of a star now for Bradford in the rough?
I think so. It's been a bit of an education, really, with Matt Marshall, because when he came in the summer, he was kind of billed as this really fast, pacey winger. And we've been used to having Kyle Reid and Omar Daly over the years doing that sort of role. But Mark Marshall doesn't really have that kind of lightning pace. He's more of someone who will take people on, you know, and he'll get good crosses into the box, which isn't particularly Reid or Daly's strength. So I think for his fans, he's just had to learn that when he's picking up the ball from deep, he's not going to beat free players and with a pace like that, because he's not that sort of a player. He's more someone who is a bit more clever on the ball and he needs a bit more time but can create a bit more. So he's starting to get a chance in the team now. I don't think up until now recently he can really argue with the lack of opportunities because he hasn't impressed that much. But now he's starting to get a bit of confidence and get the crowd behind him, which is very important. And he's looking like a decent player, definitely.
Jason, just looking at your Twitter profile this evening, top post, my piece on everyone's current fave player, Chris Routis. Tell us more.
Yes, Routis is a player who's very much polarised opinion this season, Bradford City. He's recently got back into the team playing central midfield, and it's been a very mixed time, really, for the player. He's had some really poor performances, you know, undoubtedly, and certainly the last home game, he had a real shocker and had to get taken off at half-time. There's some promise about him, and he has had some good games over the last sort of 18 months while he's been at the club. But it's just now whether he can take that step in to be a first-team regular, someone you can depend on. Because at the moment, you just don't quite know what you're going to get with him. So he certainly, you know, the tweet that you're referring to there was just making fun, really, of the fact that everyone has a very strong view on this player. You know, they either love him or they hate him, unfortunately. So it's just, I wrote a piece just that kind of where my own view is on him as a player going forwards. And yeah, like I say, got quite a lot of response that did.
Jason, also one thing I wanted to talk about is the new book that'll be coming out shortly, The Reinventing of Bradford City. Bit of an untold story there, and I'm sure that'll be bringing up quite a few things. I'm really looking forward to it because this is something that's not really documented, Bradford post the fire.
Yeah, exactly. I think it is a really interesting story how the club has emerged from what was such an incredibly dark hour. You know, because, you know, initially for 18 months they couldn't play at Valley Parade, they ended up playing at Oddsfield Stadium, home of the Bradford Bulls. And, you know, the way that the club's history has then moved on, there's been so many ups and downs over the last few, you know, the last 30 years, things like the Premier League years, the administrations going straight down to the bottom tier. And then, of course, you know, the fight back under Phil Parkinson with things like the League Cup final appearance and beating Chelsea. There's just, when you look at Bradford City's history a bit more beyond that, it's been very relatively ordinary, really. They went 40 years without getting a promotion at one point and nothing much really happened, but suddenly over these last 30 years there's been this real explosion of drama, not always in a good way, but certainly it's been very eventful. So yeah, I wanted to write a book that sort of told that story about how the club has emerged over this period and how, when you look at things like how English football has completely changed with the Premier League and what we talked about at the start, you know, how Bradford City's place in this modern-day game has been. So, yeah, put that together. Been interviewing people like Stuart McCall and Phil Parkinson as part of that book, and it's coming out this March. So, yeah, hopefully people will buy it because I think it's quite an interesting story.
And the Width of a Post website, what's on there at the moment, apart from the Chris Routis article?
Yeah, well, we've just been looking, obviously, assessing the weekend game against Burton. And we've got a couple of pieces lined up this week looking at, you know, the debate about Phil Parkinson that is raging a little bit on Twitter, and just looking ahead, really. I think, you know, like everyone, we've been a bit more critical this season because it hasn't so far met expectations. And we've been spoilt, really, last years and how good it's been at Bradford City. And this has certainly been a very average season so far. So there's been quite a lot of criticism, and that will no doubt continue, but we're trying to be constructive with that, you know, and, you know, to give balanced opinions, really, rather than just start, you know, to turn the knife in on the club and the people employed by the club.